19. June 30th continued. I did not sleep any more that night. After I got out of the house, I ran, not thinking where I went, not caring. I just wanted to get away as fast as I could. As it happened, I ran down the road toward the store and the church. I could not hear that he was following me, but I could not be sure, because my ears were pounding with my own heartbeats. I ran at top speed for, I think, a minute or more. Then I slowed down enough to look over my shoulder. Although there was no moon that night, it was clear, the sky was bright, and I could see the road plainly. There was no sign of him. I had slowed to a dog trot as I passed the pond, and when I reached the store I stopped, got partly behind it, and sat down where I could still watch the road. I did not think he could run, but I could not be sure. I had also not thought he could walk without the cane. I sat for an hour or more, getting my breath, trying to stop shaking. Pharaoh was nowhere to be seen, but I knew where he was. He had hidden under the porch. He always did that. When there was any friction between people, if my father or mother had had to scold Joseph, David, or me, for instance, he would sense it and hide. He had heard the struggle, of course. If he had not been there in the room to wake me up in time, I do not know how it would have ended. After a while, I felt thirsty and very cold. A small, chill wind had blown up, and I thought of the blankets that were still in the cave. I could pull one on over my torn shirt. I could sit at the entrance and keep watch. At that point, my brain began working again, at least a little, and I remembered that I had no shoes and no other shirt at the cave. I had taken my clothes back to the house, so while I was at the store I had better get new ones. I would need them because I knew I might never go back to the house again, at least not as long as he was there. It was coal black inside the store, but I knew the shelf where Mr. Klein kept the matches, and also where he kept the candles. I groped my way around and got a candle lit. In the clothing section of the store, it is on the rear right as you come in, I picked out a pair of sneakers my size and two shirts, one cotton, one flannel. I put on the shoes and flannel shirt, being so cold, and was just buttoning it when I heard a thud up near the front of the store. I jumped so hard I knocked the candle over and it went out. I should not have been so frightened, I know, but I was. I started shaking again and just stood there in the dark, listening. There was no other sound. Then I thought, the door. That was what had happened. I had left the door in the front of the store open about 6 inches, and the wind had blown it shut. I relit the candle, my hands shaking so I could hardly strike the match, and went to the front. It was the door, that was all. Still, I wanted to get out of there. I was not used to being such a coward. Outside, I felt better and walked, carrying my extra shirt and the candle, which I blew out and put in my pocket, to the pond. There, where the brook flows in, I drank and rested. Except for the water and the blinking of the stars, there was no movement anywhere. Yet I felt in danger. I walked on. In the cave, I had not been there for weeks, I could see by candlelight all was as I had left it. I put a blanket around my shoulders and sat in the entrance, in my usual place, where I could lean back against the rock wall and look down on the house. In the dark, it was visible only as part of a blur that formed the yard, the trees, and the bushes. There was no light in any window that I could see. I sat there all the rest of the night, watching. I was sure he did not know where I was, or where the cave was, or even that there was a cave. I did not think he could climb the hillside, but I watched anyway. In the early morning, the scene below slowly took shape and color. The leaves turned light gray and then green. The house turned white, the road black, and the hilltop behind me grew bright. I got my binoculars from inside the cave. It seemed important to observe what, if anything, he was going to do. I had a feeling he would be really anxious to know where I was. The first movement was Pharaoh, coming hesitantly around the corner of the house, sniffing as he came. He circled the house, went to the tent, circled that, and then set off down the road, his nose still to the ground. He was following me. Within 10 seconds of this, Mr. Loomis appeared. He must have been watching out the front window. He walked to the edge of the road, limping a little, but without the cane, and stared after the dog. He went a few feet, then stood on the road a minute, thinking. Finally, he walked back to the house. I could guess a couple of things from that. He had not seen or heard which way I ran, but he knew that Pharaoh would follow me. That was why he had been watching. It was lucky that in my confusion I had run down the road and not straight up to the cave. I knew what Pharaoh would do. He would track me to the store, from the store back to the pond, and from the pond to where I sat. But Mr. Loomis could not see that from the house. I could almost time Pharaoh's movements. Sure enough, in about 10 minutes, he came up through the woods, wagging his tail. I patted him and was glad to see him, but that was all I did. I was still intent on watching the scene below. Pharaoh stayed with me for about 10 minutes, and then, after sniffing around inside the cave, he trotted off down the hill back to the house. I had been feeding him in the morning. It was time for his breakfast, and his food dish was in the yard near the front porch. I suppose he thought I would follow him. I realized then that I should have fed him at the cave. I did have a few cans of meat, 3 to be exact, and also some canned hash that he would have eaten in a pinch, but it did not occur to me until after he left. And I began to realize that Pharaoh could, quite innocently, lead Mr. Loomis to me, and that if I had fed him and kept him with me, I might have prevented that. A few minutes after Pharaoh reappeared in the front yard, Mr. Loomis came out the front door, carrying his dish full of food. He put it down, and as Pharaoh began to eat, I could see that Mr. Loomis had something else in his hand. Through the binoculars, it looked like a belt, and that is what it was, one of David's or Joseph's, I suppose. He had cut it off short, and as Pharaoh ate, he slipped it around the dog's neck and fastened the buckle. Pharaoh did not seem to mind much. He gave a shake or two, and then went back to his eating. Mr. Loomis, meanwhile, went to the porch and got something else. At first, I thought it was a piece of rope, but then, from its bright green color, I knew it was not. It was a long electric cord, the one from my mother's vacuum cleaner. He slipped it through the belt around Pharaoh's neck and knotted it. He tied the other end to the porch rail. Poor Pharaoh! He had never in his life been tied up. When he finished eating, he shook himself again, trying to get the collar off, and then trotted away. When he came to the end of the tether, his head snapped back and he fell down. He stood up, shook himself, and tried again. Next, he turned around and backed off, trying to pull the collar over his head. Mr. Loomis watched. At last, having seen that the dog could not get away, he turned and went back into the house. Pharaoh, following the instinct of all dogs, sat down and chewed on the cord, but it was made of heavy wire with a tough plastic coating, and though he kept gnawing for half an hour, it was too much for his teeth. After that, he cried, a thin, mournful yipping sound he had not made since he was a puppy. I wanted to run down and untie the knot, but of course I couldn't. So I sat where I was and watched. Also, I began to think about what I should do, what was going to happen. I thought about all the routine things I should be doing, milking the cow, feeding the chickens, collecting the eggs, and weeding the garden. Could I just live up here, keeping my distance, and continue to do my chores? Perhaps the outdoor things I could. Cooking the meals I could not do, since that would mean going into the house. Mr. Loomis would have to cook for himself. Should I continue to bring him supplies from the store? I did not think he could walk far enough to get his own, not yet. I could not let him starve, no matter what he had done. I decided that, somehow or other, we would have to work out a compromise, a way that we could both live in the valley, even though not as friends. There was enough room, and he was welcome to have the house. Perhaps I could live in the store or church. I was willing to do the work as necessary, and we could stay apart and leave each other entirely alone. The trouble was, though I would be willing to do that, I was not sure he would be. Still, the effort had to be made. I decided I would go and talk to him, keeping in a distance. I was thinking of how and what to say when I fell asleep. I woke up in the late afternoon. My neck was sore and stiff, and I was hungry. I had only a smattering of food supplies, but I opened the can of hash and ate it cold. My next job is to figure out where I can build a fire, either by day so he will not see the smoke, or by night so that he will not see the flame. I expect the second way will be easier.